This podcast is for entertainment purposes only and does not replace your own financial, tax, legal, or financial product advice.
Hello, welcome to My Millennial Property. You're with John Pidgeon, and today Emily is missing in action. She is crook. Get well soon, Emily. So it's just John by himself. For the moment anyway, I'm going to be joined by Ella, who is a long-time listener, first-time caller of the show. She's been listening and following us for about 3 years, which is dedication in itself. So welcome, Ella.
Hello, how are you going?
I am awesome today, thank you. Now, I hear that you reached out to the show or in the Facebook group, I believe, a few weeks ago, and you had some queries and reservations about buying your first property. So Glenn put my hand up and said, John, can you do a clarity call live with Ella and sort it out for her? Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, well, I'll do my best. And for those who have booked a clarity call previously, you would know that it's roughly about an hour. So we'll cut to the chase and get right into it. All right, Ella, for our listeners, can you give us a brief of your situation and your roadblocks and what you want to achieve out of the call today?
Yeah, so I am a 24-year-old female living in Brizzy. I guess I've managed to save roughly 60K in savings towards a house deposit.
Awesome.
I'm on quite a decent income, so I roughly earn $120,000 pre-tax.
Cool. What do you do?
I'm a paramedic, so a lot of that income is a lot of overtime and missed meals and things like that.
Saving lives, I love it.
I'm thinking more going down the investment path rather than home ownership personally, because I'm only 24, don't really know where life's going to hold, kind of take me. I guess I have no knowledge about investment property or how to invest in property. I don't know anything about doing the research, all of the numbers, how to find out, you know, about rental yields and, you know, vacancy rates and things like that. And so I guess I just, before I jump in, want to know all the numbers and the background before, you know, putting that massive amount of money that I've saved and purchasing a property.
Yeah, sure. Okay, that's awesome. Thanks for sharing all that. And it's a really common situation that you've got yourself in. Mm. First of all, well done on getting yourself 60K saved up. How long has that taken you?
To be honest, most of it's come this year because of COVID and I changed professions and jobs. I got a massive chunk of my leave paid out. And then with this job, I just have the potential to save roughly anywhere between $1,800 and $2,000 a fortnight, so I can just pump money away. So I've probably managed to save about $45,000 in the last year. So
wow.
Most of that's
COVID's
come,
been good to you.
Yeah. that's probably where most of the money is come from.
Okay, great. But it's all been done off your own bat.
Yeah. It's
fantastic.
Me.
Okay. And what's your savings plan going forward? What's your per month savings at the minute?
Probably about $4,000 a month I can save.
Great. Okay. And you feel that's comfortable? Is that something that you set a goal about, or is that just what's left over?
That's pretty much just what's left over. I kind of budget. I have like a cash flow plan that I follow every week, and pretty much my expenses don't change because I've already budgeted for them. So that's just the leftover money.
Great. Okay. Awesome. So I think when we're looking at this, and as I said before, it's just a common situation that people in their 20s are in. It's like, well, okay, I've got some money. Maybe my family aren't into property investing, or if they are, they don't tell me the ins and outs for what they've done.
Yeah.
Or don't feel comfortable. Has that been you? Have you got a brother or a mother or father that's invested?
So my brother has just started his property journey. He's actually younger than me too, so he's even a better saver than I am. And he has just bought off like a house and land package.
Right.
And for him, he is moving into the property for 12 months or so he can get all the first homeowner grants. And then I literally had this conversation with him last week. I was like, oh, have you considered all the numbers, like about vacancy rates in the area and all of that sort of thing? And he's like, oh, I'm not too worried about the numbers. I'll just live in it if the numbers don't match up. So he's more, what's the word, risk, he has a higher risk tolerance than what I would have. So I'd rather know the numbers before jumping in and buying a property, whereas he was very much like, oh, you know, I got the COVID grants because he bought last year and is quite happy to live in the property for 12 or so months and if he couldn't rent it out, continue living in it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, each to their own, huh? But I think you sleep better at night knowing that you've done enough research. Now, we can't guarantee things when we buy them, but what we can do is eliminate a lot of the wrong pathways to take, I suppose, when it comes to property investing. And for Sydney and Melbourne folk, you would well and truly know that if you've got a deposit of 60 grand or 80 grand, that's not getting a lot these days. So I think, and I spoke about the live podcast, what's happening now is this shift in people going and rent vesting as opposed to buying their own home to live in as their first first property, just purely on the basis that they can't afford to live in the area they live, to own a home, but they want to keep that lifestyle. Is that why you've resigned yourself to rent vesting?
So in the area I live in, I'm roughly 15 minutes from Brisbane CBD. Like the townhouse I'm renting at the moment is probably more than what I can afford and the rent's quite reasonable. So I think in my area, properties are selling for over $1 million and I personally don't think I could afford that. Units are a little bit more within range. Like I could probably afford a unit in the area. But definitely not a house. So
yeah. Okay, cool. And what rent are you paying per week at the moment, Ella?
$300 a week.
Yeah, okay. So everyone's just sighed with amazement there on that figure of $300 a week unless you come from the country.
I do rent with family though. So it's in total the rent is $600 a week.
Okay. Yeah, cool. So that's smart. That's halving the rent, or in some cases it's quartered and you get to save maximum dollars and go and invest sooner rather than later. Yeah, awesome. Okay, great. So for listeners, I didn't get a rap sheet on Ella. We're basically shooting from the hip here today. I'd normally have a rap sheet, but in any case, I think three things we need to understand when we go to invest. Number one, highest priority is your short and long-term goals. What do we want to achieve long-term from a financial wealth perspective? Two is our strategy. What strategy are we going to use first time around? And we know that's going to be different every time and we'll delve deeper into that. And three, what is our current knowledge level and what research have we done up until now? So for anyone looking at this at the first time, as a 24-year-old or a 44-year-old, jumping on realestate.com is your last step. It's not your first step because usually that's common is to say, well, gee, the mortgage broker said I could borrow $500,000. Awesome. Now type in $500,000 on realestate.com and see where that takes me. What has been your research and action up until now, Ella?
Probably that, realestate.com. I just kind of was trying to get a feel for the area, to be honest, and what sort of my price guide could buy. And I guess in Queensland there is always like price negotiation, or they don't sometimes even put the price of the property, or they'll put like offers over $550, for example. So I guess I've been looking around the area and it's more just trying to get a feel for different areas. I guess in my profession is the good thing about it is I can kind of I go to a lot of different suburbs, so I've started to get a bit more of a feel of different suburbs around Brisbane that I personally didn't know much about. But I guess the research I haven't done enough or haven't done a lot because I actually don't know how to research or what to research.
Okay,
apart from realestate.com.
Yeah, and you type in a figure and say, I want a house and I want 3 bedrooms in it.
Yeah.
And click OK and it comes up with 1,000 options.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, so let's delve into our goals first of all, and then we'll talk strategy after that. So long-term goals, we're 24. Mm-hmm. What if we looked out 10, 15, 20 years into the future, what does Ella want to achieve financially?
I just want to be financially independent in the sense of like I want to have enough assets to live well in retirement. So and that comes from a bit more of a personal situation. Like my parents don't own property. They don't own a lot of assets, and they're kind of will be going into retirement, maybe struggling a little bit more. Whereas for me, I don't want that future for myself. So ideally would like to own, kind of have like a diverse, I guess, basket of assets, like own a bit of property, own some shares, have a good lump of super behind me, but also like enjoy life. Like I don't want to be a stinge. I still want to travel. I still want to do lots of things, but just kind of realizing that I can't do everything at once.
Sure. Okay. No, that's awesome. And I think that's a really good point, because at the moment, by the sounds of it, you've got a good balance. You're saving $4,000 a month. You've got a lifestyle that you're pretty happy with in an area that you want to live in. Now, the first step on this financial wealth for you, obviously you're already contributing to super, but you want to go and buy an investment property. The first thing that springs to mind would be, let's make sure that it wipes its own face, meaning that the income and the expenses are pretty similar. You're not buying a property that's got a $5,000-$7,000 shortfall per year.
And that's exactly it, yeah.
Yeah, and that's factoring in things like interest rate rises and vacancy rates and things like that.
Yep.
Yeah, okay, awesome. So you're 40 years until the government says you can probably retire. So we've got a bit of time up our sleeve here, haven't we?
Yes.
Well, now, when we talk major assets, we talk property, shares, and essentially our super, mm-hmm. which is shares, but we'll keep it separate for now. Yep. So which one have you got more of an attraction to, or you're not fussed, you just want to run away from what your maybe parents didn't achieve, I suppose, which is very similar to what I did?
Again, I probably want a basket of everything. I do have a little share portfolio that doesn't have much in it, but that's because I'm more saving towards the house goal, because I feel like that's probably the hardest one to achieve is the investment property or getting into property, because you need such a decent lump of money to get in.
Yes.
So that's kind of my first goal. And then I probably, once I've paid off Hex, was thinking more about putting some more contributions into super, or what I would be paying in Hex a week, just chucking that into super and, just investing any spare cash I had into my little share portfolio was kind of my thinking.
Yeah, awesome. That's great. And 40 years, you chuckled when I mentioned that, but that's really what we've got ahead of us. Yeah. So I can say now with confidence that if you put as much importance into the financial side of your life as you're doing now for the next 40 years, it's going to be fine for you, right? Right. So we're not ending the call now, but I say that because a lot of people don't get going until their mid-30s, mid-40s, even sometimes mid-50s, right? Mm-hmm. And they're just relying on super, whereas you're looking at it as you said, a basket of, I'm going to be at any one time for the next 40 years putting my money into one of those three, if not all three at the same time, which is awesome.
Yeah, I think it's because I've seen, like, in my family, for example, like we were at a place where we were really well off, and then I've also seen them crash to not being so well off because of some business decisions my dad made. So for me, it's kind of just, and it's the same for my brother. We kind of place a bit more importance on our financial future because we've seen, I guess, what's going to happen in the future if you don't.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, whichever way it lands, it's a good thing to motivate you going forward, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%.
All right, so let's look back to the next 3 to 5 years. If in 5 years' time you're 29, or let's call it 30.
yeah.
what what do we want? Is it one investment property and a share portfolio and some super? Is it a couple of properties and just some drip feed into shares? What may it look like?
Well, look, I don't really know where I'm going to be in 5 years, to be honest. But I guess for me, probably I'd be happy with like ownership of one property. I do want to do some travel to Europe at some point. So for me, I think a reasonable goal to be would be to have one property and maybe drip feed some money into like a share portfolio. Maybe after that point when I've sort of turned 30, I may have a partner. I may be looking at more kids at that stage. I really don't know. So I think being a bit more conservative, maybe just the one property.
Yep. Okay, cool. So if we get this one right, mm-hmm. and then just go back to drip feeding shares and contributing to super, in 5 years' time, you can sit back around Christmas time and say, yeah, I'm really happy with the financial aspect of my life.
Yep.
Awesome. Okay. So the reason I asked that is because a lot of people speak to me and say, well, I want two properties in 5 years or three properties in 5 years. So that really determines what the strategy is going to be at the outset for that first property.
Yep.
But for now, we're saying one in five, we're going to get that purchase done in the next 12 months or so. So it almost takes the pressure off after that period is to go back to the drawing board and build the savings up back again to diversify into other assets. But on the back of that, the key question is for Rentvestors, when are we going to or wanting to buy our own home to live in?
I guess for me, I was looking in case of buying my own home. When am I thinking of doing that? Or
yeah, because the traditional rent path is right. I want to build a portfolio up, and then I'll wheel back around and sell down on one or two of them, or I've got some cash up my sleeve to buy my own home to live in and keep my portfolio. So, at some stage in your life, you may want to have a home to live in. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I would definitely like to own my own home that I live in.
Okay.
I'm not sure, to be honest. And again, this comes down to, I guess, being 24 and not really knowing what I'm doing with my life.
That's all right. And I didn't know at 24 either. Yeah. I just, knew I wanted to run a business and take on the world in property, but how that looked and shaped, I didn't know. But without setting your goals for you, I might say, right, in this 12-month period, we buy an investment property and then continue our savings plan and keep ourselves really cash heavy for the next 4 years, so that if we want to buy our own home in that area, in that time frame, and we meet a partner and we want to settle down together, we're not reliant on them to buy our home together. I've contributed to this, and whether that be in shares to keep it fluid or liquid, that's fine as well, as opposed to just keeping it in a bank account. But staying cash heavy would be my recommendation through that 4 year period.
Yeah, cool. Because I don't have a date. Like, I know some people are really big on timelines, whereas I'm like, I don't really know when I'd want to own my own property. At some point, definitely. Probably I would say in my 30s, or at least have purchased a home to live in my 30s, potentially around when I have kids. But
sure.
If I have kids. But I don't know what that kind of looks like, or I don't have a time limit on that. So
that's fine. Yeah, I'd just say from now on, just keep one eye on the longer prize.
Yeah, okay.
And one eye on the now.
Yeah.
And then we're not losing sight, and it doesn't come creep up on us, and it's like, oh, hang on, I haven't got any money, but now I want to buy a house to live in. So, like, looking at your numbers, not sure how much more you want to be able to have savings to go and buy that property, but if it's the next 12 months we dedicate to contributing to our property, that'll give us an extra basically 50 grand. So that'll make it 110.
Mm-hmm.
That may include some buffers in your life as well. So that'll round it out to maybe 100. And then the next 3 to 4 years after that, if we're saving the same amount as a minimum, right, we're going to have the best part of 200K in cash, either invested in shares or just put into our bank account.
Yep.
And that may be your deposit for your own home. And if it's not, if you're not ready then, you can go and invest in another major asset.
Yep.
Sound good?
Yeah, sounds really good.
Okay, awesome. All right, we'll take a break and we'll come back and talk strategy.
If you're after personal financial advice, don't get it from a podcast. If you would like help based on your own personal situation, head over to sortyourmoneyout.com, click get help, and we'd be happy to introduce you to one of our trusted advisors. We also have a panel of trusted mortgage brokers we can connect you with to get you into your first home, an investment property purchase, or to review your current loan if you don't have a broker. Our panel of advisors, mortgage brokers, and accountants work with clients all over Australia so they can connect with you wherever you are. That's sortyourmoneyout.com and click get help.
Right, so first part of this, we talked about the boring old goals and what's short-term, what long-term, and just realizing the importance of what's that next step before we make this initial step. And a lot of people discount that, and by the sounds of it, your brother may have done that. But that's okay. He's live by the sword, die by the sword, and it may work out okay for him. But when you're reaching out wanting to be more strategic around your investing, they're the real key parts to this, is understanding what you want in your life, because you can't cookie cutter someone else's approach because everyone's different, okay? So let's talk about strategy. We want to know the answers to 8 key areas, right? And grab a pen if you're listening or driving, pull over, or flying, that might be hard. But we want to know strategy. So overall, we're saying the overall strategy is it buy for capital growth, buy for cash flow, buy for tax benefits, or buy for all three of those with a mixture of all of that. So if I asked you which one is that for you, what would it be, Ella?
A mixture. Of all three.
A mixture of all three?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Because, again, for the listeners, we don't want to go and buy just purely for tax benefits. Our accountant said we need to reduce our tax. We don't want that as a number one focus, but it might be a higher priority based on your income levels. Yeah. So the answer to that then determines, well, maybe what that next answer is, and that's the class of property. Are we buying blue chip? Are we buying long-term buy and hold, which is a sort of a B-class property in mum and dad suburbs, or are we buying a C-class property, which is more of a reno flip, add some value, create some cash, and then propel us into that next purchase, which is more outer suburbs, cheaper property? Don't need to answer this, but just think about what that might be. From the outset, I can see your situation. To go and buy in a blue chip suburb might not be possible now because of price point, but ideally we want to end up with blue chip assets in our portfolio, don't we?
I don't know if I could be bothered to do a bit of a massive reno, just because I'm quite time poor. So I'd probably be B category, I would say. If I could afford it, but yeah, probably more a B category.
Cool. Yeah, excellent. Price point, if I said to you that, that's the third one, by the way, if we said price, what price scares you? What price would keep you up at night?
Well, I was actually thinking about this before doing this episode, like, because I kind of had an idea of a price between sort of $500,000, $600,000. But if it was kind of paying for itself, I would consider going higher. If it was kind of a property that was pretty much, I didn't have to put any cash into it, and it just, you know, the rent paid for itself, essentially.
Awesome.
I would consider going higher.
Good answer. Yeah, that's good. Because, yeah, if we can get our head around the running costs of that property when we're not contributing to it or don't have to, then the sky could potentially be the limit. But there is that tipping point where it might be around 700K to 800K where properties don't no longer look after themselves because the yields are a little bit lower. Mm-hmm. So 500 to 600K might be it. Type of property, house, unit, townhouse, block of land, mini developments, where is your head at in respect to that?
And this is where I really am not sure. Because I kind of, look, ideally I would love a house just because the land value tends to go up. And the depreciation costs probably aren't as heavy as units. There seems to be more growth with house and land versus, I guess, units. And then you also often have to pay body corp. However, if I could find like a unit in an area that it was maybe closer to the city, that there wasn't an oversupply, potentially didn't have a massive body corp, I probably would consider it. But sure. Again, I'm really not sure, to be honest.
Yeah, look, I think it's a fair assessment to say that land appreciates and the building depreciates. So that means, do we go and buy 2 acres worth of land in the middle of nowhere? No, absolutely not. But do we buy a 500-600 square meter block with a 3-bedroom house on it, as opposed to a 1-bedroom a unit right in the city centre that's part of a complex of 180,
yeah.
Right? That's, I suppose, what you're comparing it to. So all I'd say on the unit space is if you're going there, just make sure it's got something that's a little bit more unique. So large 2 beds or 3 beds are much more appealing than a 1 bed and much more entertaining for people to rent and for people to – or for valuers to come in and look at it. I'd also have low – numbers in the complex as well. So a unit complex of 4 or 8 or 12 would be ideal. And there's 3 ways you can make money in property: add some value, buy at discount, and get some capital growth. Right now, the last one is the least in our control, isn't it? We can't control how much growth we get in an area, and there's so many indicators are focused on that and vary that outcome. But we can look at the first two and say, well, if we buy an old house or unit that's 1980s, 1990s, we can add some cosmetic improvements to it that's going to improve the value of that property. Can we buy at a discount in a heated market? No, but we can avoid paying too much for it in this type of climate as well.
Yeah.
So just factoring in those 3 points.
Yeah.
Now, loan-to-value ratio is another one, knowing if you're going at 90 or 80%. Were you wanting to save 20% or just go in as soon as the banks could lend you money?
Look, I'm not too fast. Initially, I wanted 20%, but I think I would be happy with a 10% deposit, just sort of after listening to all the podcasts and things. I think I could do 10%, and particularly there's a lot of I don't know all of the different LMI schemes they've got at the moment, but I'd probably be happy with 10%, which I'm probably at more or less by now. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. Look, well, you've got stamp duty on top of your 10%, obviously. Yep. But yeah, if you said, right, 400K purchase, 40 grand deposit plus stamps, you're in for 60. So if you can get it up to probably 80,000, that would be ideal. That can bring you in at maybe a 550 purchase plus stamps. That gives you a few more options, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. So that would incur lender's mortgage insurance. Generally, that's capitalized into your loan, but it's an income producing asset, so all the running costs are generally tax deductible, but speak to your accountant about that. Buying entity, because it's only you, I guess it's going to be your name as the title holder.
Mm-hmm.
That's the next point to consider. If you're looking at something more strategic and maybe it's a short-term play and turn it around in 12 months, 2 years, etc., then you might be looking at other options like a company or unit trust or something like that. And then the last two are location and yield. Now, location's probably the biggest or the people put the most importance on, but I actually put the most importance on everything we've spoken up until now in terms of your goals and parts of the strategy that need tying together to come to a particular location. Because I think generally speaking, and we do our research around the top 30 cities around the country, if you bought in any one of those top 30 and simply held it and it was a good asset that was right for you and you didn't have to, you weren't forced to sell it, and the historics were that it went up over time consistently, then if you held that until you were 65, 40 odd years time, the odds are it's going to work out pretty good for you, right?
Yeah, yeah. And that would be ideally, like, if I could hold the property for if I could hold the property and then own my own home, so that it, if I could eventually almost even pay it off, or it could just be a part of like my wealth creation, I guess, portfolio, something I take with me.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. And pass on to the kids. so Yeah, just and I'll talk a little bit about location, but the yield is the other very important point to this. And if you are building a portfolio, you need to factor in that, because servicing gets reduced the more properties you buy. But knowing what yield is going to, as I said before, wipe its face. And in today's markets, probably 4% is a good figure. If we're putting down a 10% cash deposit, understand your running costs, of course, before tax and after tax, but generally 4% gross yield should cover its costs, definitely after tax anyway, but it depends on your tax rate. But I think that's a pretty good starting point based on the interest rates as at today. But we are factoring in a 2 or 3 weeks of vacancy a year.
Yep.
Even if you put in interest rates at 4%, 5%, see how that looks. And worst case, is that manageable on your salary at the moment? We know we're saving $4,000 a month, so we don't want to eat into much of that at all because interest rates have risen. But it's a fact of life that's out of our control that it may happen. Hopefully the rents have increased by that time.
Mm. Yeah, that's a really good point.
So then location, we've molded basically, and as I said, a speed date strategy, but we've molded 7 of those points. We've now got location as the last.
Yeah.
And that's been strategic by me because it's like, okay, we've got answers to those, and obviously we'd thrash them out in more detail to get a full understanding. But once we've got those 7 parts, we then define the locations that we're looking in based on the strategy that we've set with those other 7 parts of that strategy. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yep. And I guess, I like you were saying, most people probably look at location first rather than, I guess, correct, doing all the numbers, which is which is what I've been doing, really.
So notice we haven't actually even talked about where do we go and research, where do we go and find anything, right?
Yeah.
And we're 30 minutes into a conversation now. Again, strategic, because let's focus on our own backyard first before we actually turn the computer on or go for a drive.
Mm.
So that's really important, and I stress that because, yeah, if we do it the other way around, what tends to happen is we just end up going around in circles and we start to question and doubt ourselves and our next step. And then by the time we get to even put in an offer, it's like, do I even know what I'm doing here?
Yeah.
Which you may have experienced already, and you're not even in a position to buy yet, or you are, but you're still saving money and creating buffers, et cetera.
Mm.
So let's, any questions around any of that strategy or goals or your own situation?
No, not at all. I guess the other thing too is I would consider is if it worked out better to live in the property for 12 months and then move out as a rental, and I would consider that option, but it would have to be, again, in a location that I could easily get to work.
Yes.
So again, and then I would feel like I'm probably putting too much emotion into it rather than putting the numbers in, because it would come under, oh, well, am I happy to live there for 12 months sort of thing?
Yes. Yeah.
So I'm kind of maybe leaning to more towards having that segregation of being like, no, this is purely an investment property, so that I don't get too much like emotion attached with the property.
Yeah, that's a fair call. And everyone's got a different personality, haven't they? So if you said to yourself, righto, I'm going to give up 12 months of my lifestyle to not live in the suburb that I'm currently living in to save $20,000 in stamp duty or whatever it may be, is that worth it? Now, we're going to be paying rent anyway, so $300 a week, $15,000 a year. What's the repayments on my mortgage, because I'm responsible for that for that 12-month year.
Yep.
So do the numbers and say, well, it's probably not going to be $20,000 net savings. It might be 15 or 12 or 13, something like that.
Yep.
Is it worth that, or do I just keep the emotion out of it, as you said, because my personality type is, hang on a minute, I don't want to live down here. Like, I don't want to live in this house or unit, right? My lifestyle's ruined. So understand your personality, and that's a big part of risk profile and personality can determine our strategy sometimes. But keep it in the mix and look at areas that you could live in for work purposes and not have to commute 4 hours a day. And if it does hit the sweet spot like it has done for your brother, You've got the government benefits and you're also happy to live in it, then great. It is only for a 12-month period.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's finish off with some research areas and where can we go to get some data, basically. So I think getting the goals established, going into more detail around our 8-point strategy is really critical. So now you can, when you go to research, you actually know what you're researching for, right? You know the suburbs that you might have shortlisted, so you can go to the likes of SQM Research and find vacancy rates. You can see what that's been trending like for the last 10 years. Ideally, you want to see it under 2%. Yep. If it's sitting at 4 or 5% through COVID, that's probably a concern. There may have been an oversupply or it's a bit of a volatile type of market to be in, right? And generally speaking, there's a lot more demand than there is supply. So again, if vacancy rates are high now, that is a concern.
Yeah, okay.
Realestate.com and Domain are obviously your free sites for finding property, but in there they've also got market trends. So you can see for the last 10 years what the median house prices and unit prices have been. Yeah. And if you're looking at a unit, you can see, well, it's been trending at about 3% a year for the last 10 years, whereas houses have been 8%. Okay, yeah. So you make an assessment on that. You can go to like the ATO or the all the census data to basically look at, not the ATO, sorry, the Australian Bureau of Statistics. So that census is just been completed. So next year you'll have a new set of data that's up to date as of 2021, which is awesome. You've got a company called Microburbs, which basically extracts all the census data results and puts it into a suburb. So you can type in a postcode anywhere around the country and it spits out the census data right in front of you, which is pretty awesome. So
that's
it does
awesome,
fast track. Yeah, because, you know, if you've been onto the census data and looked at the demographics and geographics and all of that on that site, it's pretty clunky, right?
Yeah, it is.
So, yeah, looking at somewhere like Microburbs to do that. And then once we get down to maybe 2, 3, 4 locations or suburbs, you can then talk to local council. You can talk to real estate agents, right? Real estate agents are actually your friend through this period, not your foe, right?
Okay.
I think a lot of people treat them as, oh, I don't want to tell them anything because they'll just stalk me and ring me and bother me, right? Well, let that happen for 3 months of your life and then you can go back to normal.
Yeah, right.
So I don't have any problems going to an open home and telling the real estate agent my strategy.
Yeah. I guess then the other thing too with going to open homes is, and my concern is, like, because I do so much shift work and because I do so many I work a lot of weekends or I work part of weekends, I think that's going to be a struggle when it comes to the time of potentially buying and building a lot of those relationships.
Cool.
So I think I might have to even consider, like, I would consider potentially a buyer's agent in that sense, just because I don't know, I might be quite time poor. And it's harder for me to get to open homes, to get the weekends off, to go and do the research.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. So I think, like, I prefer everyone to go and find their own property, right? And we run a buyer's agent service. So that sounds a bit weird, but I think what you do by doing the research yourself and getting your hands dirty is you learn and grow from that so that you can do it 10 times over and then you can teach your kids. It's the best thing you can give them. But I suppose two things come into play there, if not three. One is, how much time have you got in your hands? If you haven't got enough time to dedicate, then you may be better outsourcing it. Your knowledge. So if you've done all what we're talking about today and defined your strategy, and you know what you're doing in respect to putting in offers and dealing with agents, then again, you're good to go. If you feel as it's all still a bit cloudy, then outsourcing may be an option. And then the last one would be obviously budget. Have you factored in the cost of a buyer's agent as opposed to doing it yourself, which is basically just sweat equity and your time that you've got or haven't got?
And look, I ideally would like to do most of it myself if I can, because, like you said, it's a learning experience. And, you know, if I, you know, you know, a change and decide I want more property. At least I've gone through the, you know, the sweat and tears. So I have an understanding of the process versus maybe if I went through a buyer's agent and maybe didn't have that knowledge quite as much.
Totally. Absolutely. So obviously wary of time. We do need to sort of round it up in a moment. But for anyone listening, if you want some paid subscriptions to really sink your teeth into this stuff, then something like RP Data Core Logic is handy, and you may be able to get a month or 2 month subscription for that, or pay per suburb report, etc. And another one that we use is Archistar, which again draws from council to be able to look at flood zones, heritage listed properties, bushfire zones, can it be developed, all those sort of things, height restrictions from the council, and it's a really effective tool to give you peace of mind as well.
Yeah, that's awesome. I didn't know that any of this data, where to even start finding the data, so that's great.
Yeah, and there's a lot of wind out there online, isn't there? So you can become overwhelmed for no real reason. But at the end of the day, 90% of what we've spoken about today is actually about you. It's about your strategy, your goals, and what you want out of it. Mm. And then the final 10% is, right, this is what I'm going to buy, this is where I'm going to look for it, and away I go.
Yeah, okay.
Mm. All right, any questions, final comments, Ella?
I guess, when should I start thinking about engaging a mortgage broker?
Yeah, so I would actually have a conversation with them now to look at your situation, say, right, how much can I borrow on my income? Because that might probably not change in the next 12 months. So that's a pretty good guide already.
Yep.
And they'll be able to tell you, right, you've got enough to buy X amount of property now. Yep. In 6 months' time, this is how much you can buy because you've increased your deposit by 24 grand based on your assessment, and you can reverse engineer it from there. So definitely start that conversation now, as well as if you, your accountant in your situation is not imperative, but just to round off to making sure you got things under control there and then having a conveyancer ready to go as well.
Yeah, okay, awesome.
Mm. How is that? Is that giving you a little bit more to think about?
Yeah, so much. I'm probably going to re-listen to this episode like 3 or 4 times and just like make notes. It's been awesome. Thank you so much.
Cool. No worries. Well, apologies. It's been a little bit longer than our norm, but, you know, I get on a run. When Emily's not here, I go wild, and that's the way it is. But, thanks for reaching out, Ella. It's been really good. Hopefully, if you've taken one or two things away from that to make a better decision, then we've had a win, haven't we?
Yeah, thank you so much. So many pearls of wisdom that I will definitely take away and research.
Cool, no worries. All right, as always, thanks for tuning in, and look forward to chatting to you again soon.
We acknowledge the Darkin Young people, traditional custodians of the land on which our studio sits, and pay respect to their elders, past and present. We extend that respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples who may listen to our podcast.
Taking your property journey to the next level starts with education.
That's why we make this podcast, but we've also created online courses to equip you with the knowledge you need to take the next steps.
I've created the Solvair Online Academy, open to both first home buyers and seasoned investors, where I share my tips and experience from 20 years in the property space.
And I've created the Buying Coach, built from my experience as a buyer's advocate to demystify the confusion around purchasing property, particularly for first home buyers.
Follow the links in the show notes to sign up and get started today.
This podcast is for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general financial advice only, which does not take into account your objectives, financial situation, or needs. Because of that, you should consider if the advice is appropriate to you and your needs before acting on the information. If you do choose to buy a financial product, read the product disclosure statement and obtain appropriate financial advice tailored to your needs. Simo Interactive Proprietary Limited, the publisher of the podcast, is an authorised representative of Money Sherpa Proprietary Limited, which holds financial services license 451289.